Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It is Season 6, Episode 63, and the Steelers get a big one at Heinz Field yesterday, Dave. A 34-27 win over the Denver Broncos. And who kidnapped the Steelers defense at halftime, and what did they do with them?
Yeah, and first of all, please let it be, let the record show that David Todd is playing hurt today, so major props to him. I know he's not feeling well today, so we appreciate him bucking up today, David. And that's a great question to start off with after giving up 27 first half points and allowing the Broncos defense to convert 8 of 8 third downs in the first half. You're thinking, well, you know, can this team at least kind of make this thing close? It's probably going to take 40 points from the offense to win this. But lo and behold, they came out in the second half. I think it was a mixture of a lot of things. Mike Tomlin, after the game, you know, said really they didn't change much. And I got to be quite honest with you, David. I think you've gone through the game as well, too. It didn't look like there was a lot of schematic changes in the second half. Mike Tomlin pretty much chalked it up to they quit kicking their own butts in the second half. You know, people were assignment strong.
Yeah, a lot of blown assignments in the first half that led to big gains.
Mm-hmm. And I think the most notable difference, and I wrote about this just a moment ago on Steelers Depot, was Antoine Blake only played, from my initial count, David, 4 snaps in the second half.
And they were early. And I'll tell you a couple things to see out of that, Dave. And I don't know. I mean, I'll say it again. We've said it for 3 weeks in a row now. I do not know how you cannot have Brandon Boykin on the field in those situations. Look, I don't know whether it was Will Allen or Blake or Gay or whomever screwed up on the second touchdown where Manny Sanders went 61 yards without a guy in the frame. But the Steelers brought corners off of each edge. They had flipped Blake over to that right side, Gay off the left. It looked like Will Allen was up against the line of scrimmage. We just saw the Steelers playing soft coverage the whole time. I mean, their corners were playing, as we've seen them do so often, 9, 10, 11 yards off, and passes were being completed. And, you know, not that one play signifies some of the differences, but we saw Will Gay last week kind of sit on a kind of bubble screen that he picked off and took for a pick six against the Bengals. Well, in this one, you saw Boykin sit on one where he read that the guy, you know, his guy was going to go in, I think, ran a slant. He stepped up with Demaryius Thomas, I think it was, and almost made a pick there. The defense was just so much dramatically better the second half. I don't have a perfect answer for it either, Dave, but they did play tighter coverage and just, you know, better all around. But you're right, Boykin on the field and Blake off the field.
And really, if you go back and look at that first half, though, David, too, you know, they played up at times in that first half as well, too. So, you know, we'll see what the charting says when Alex gets it done here later this afternoon. Of course, we're still waiting for the all 22 to be released at some point today as well, too. But I mean, schematically, really, I don't think there was a big difference in the first and second half. Personnel, most definitely, because as we mentioned, Blake only played 4 snaps here. And one of those snaps, too, you want to talk about, you know, a game of inches and how one play can maybe make a difference in the game. One of those 4 snaps that Blake played was that deep pass to Demaryius Thomas down the right side that Brock Osweiler dropped in the bucket over the top of Blake in coverage, who was up on the line in coverage on that one. And Demaryius Thomas couldn't control the football as he went out of bounds. And had he made that catch, the Broncos were up 7 at the time. they would have had a first and 10 at the Steelers 20 at that point. So
was that the play after he hit Manny Sanders with the long pass up the right side?
You're exactly right. That could have been two explosive plays back to back. And didn't we see that earlier in the season? One a run and one a pass in the game against the Chiefs.
Yeah, we did. And in fact, that's exactly what it was. It was the tight end up the seam for a huge gain. And then, Charkandrick Rust went over right tackle for, 23 more or something.
Yeah. I mean, you just hate, to give up any explosive plays, but to give up two of them back to back like that, it felt like the Steelers defense in that first half gave up a ton of explosive plays, David. But when you go back and you look at the numbers, the Broncos only had three explosive plays in that game. Now I'm going to ask you this: how much do you think Brock Osweiler's shoulder hurt him in the second half? That's the first part of the question. And how much, it's obvious the Broncos dropped some easy balls in the second half too, right?
Yeah, look, Brock went 7 for 26 for 84 yards in the second half. And I'll give the Steelers defense credit for some of it. But you obviously have to think that he was impacted to some degree with the shoulder injury. The other thing, Dave, is the thing that I think was incredibly significant in this game, and when you see it again, you can see when drives got stopped by each team. Penalties were a huge factor in this one. And you just look at some of the plays and some of the penalties and how, just Denver had a touchdown called back. The Steelers' drives in the first half were stalled largely because of penalties when they got stalled. Denver took some penalties in the second half. They were a huge, huge part of this game.
Yeah, and in fact, how many points did the Steelers have off of turnovers in this one?
You'll have to, I don't know, tell me.
Let's see. They had
Shazier's interception. Did they score?
Well, the early touchdown after Will Allen's forced fumble. Yep. Was a touchdown. They had a touchdown after the interception by Shazier,
yeah,
right?
Yep. So that's it. Those were the two turnovers.
Yep, exactly. So, 14 putos, as I'd like to call them, a pretty big factor in that game, whereas the Broncos did they have any after an interception, the one I think that Roby picked off
in the middle, yeah.
I think they scored a touchdown there for some points off of points off of turnovers, but that was it.
And, of course, they didn't score on the second interception, which was
brutal. We'll get to that.
it's amazing. If you showed somebody the stat sheet from this game right now and said, tell me how it went, you look at the numbers, and the numbers are they're virtually identical. I mean, they're about as close as you're going to get for two teams in terms of total yards and things, just going through the stat sheet. The difference really in terms of kind of how the game was actually played, the Broncos were able to move the football on the ground a little bit. The Steelers were really not able to do that at all. But, Ben had a field day through the air. And, both teams finish right around 50% on third down efficiency. Obviously, the Broncos went for it on fourth down twice late in the game, but total yards 385 to 377, total drives 15 each. Obviously, that's gonna kind of sit itself out. But pass yards per pass 6.1 for both teams. They both had two turnovers. But you go to rushing, and the Broncos had 104 to 23. You go to penalties, the Broncos had 127 to 63 for the Steelers.
Yeah, I think you can circle that penalty stat right there. We talk about the Tox stat here and there. The Tox number was actually even because both teams had three explosive plays. Both teams had two turnovers. So at that point, I think you can circle the penalties, and I think you can circle the fact that the Steelers cashed in two turnovers for scores versus one for the Broncos, and that's a 7-point differential. There's your ball game.
Yeah. And, just to kind of highlight a couple plays, this obviously was a game of big plays, and the Broncos punt return that they took back that was, called a penalty. I'm sure if that had been against the Steelers, people would be saying that's a ticky-tack call. It was the right call. They're on the field. So, the guy did the right thing. That was a poor judgment play. Jim Nantz said, he could see that Shamarco's left foot was out of bounds. I don't know. I watched it a bunch of times. It's not clear to me that his foot's out of bounds. It's damn close, but I wouldn't want to be going to the video replay with the call on the field being a touchdown. Let's put it that way. But the play, Dave, one of the plays, and this might not stand out for some people unless you go back and watch it again, but at the end of the first half, when the Steelers got the ball back and they're down, what is it, 27 to 10, and on second down, Ben gets sacked, and the Steelers use their second timeout, and it's 3rd and 13, and he throws that ball to Antonio Brown, and he catches in the middle of the field, and then runs horizontally, straight out of bounds. He's able to kind of juke around a couple guys, and then he runs out of bounds, and then the Steelers, you know, make a couple more plays to get a field goal. And yeah, I realize it only made it 27 to 13 as opposed to 27 to 10. I felt like that was really worth something there to get those 3 points, because they've been very good at the end of halves of late, and, you know, kind of turn things around when you come out in the second half.
You know what? Great minds think alike, Dave, and that's why we've been able to do this show so long, because I have the printed out play-by-play game book here, and I have that drive circled to talk about, because it was only 3 points, but after such a – you got to remember that drive happened after the two-minute warning, because the Broncos' previous drive, it ended in a touchdown to Demaryius Thomas from 6 yards out on a very poor up-high tackle attempt.
By
Blake there, and you're thinking, my goodness, yeah, man, that's the Steelers.
Classic stiff arm to the helmet and away.
Yeah, where have we seen that before? From Demaryius Thomas. But, yes, it was only 3 points, but that, in my opinion, was a key 3 points. It allowed them to at least go into halftime with some momentum, even though Denver was going to get the second half kickoff there. And they pulled within in two touchdowns at that point. So I'm with you. That not enough is going to be written or said about that final drive, in my opinion. And you're smart to point out that play to Antonio Brown for 16 yards where he got out of bounds. And
let me ask you about a play that happened. It was the next play, and it's when Wheaton went up high and made a really nice catch. And Martavis Bryant's running a cross or a deep slant behind him. Wheaton really goes up and makes a nice hand catch for 14 yards. Are you 100% comfortable that he was thrown to Wheaton in that pass?
I couldn't tell you for sure, because I thought the same thing there. It'd be interesting to see if Ben or Tomlin ain't going to give you an answer on that. But if Ben, during his talk with the media, is asked a question along those lines there. But it was a tremendous – boy, what a player Marcus Wheaton has been in the last several weeks.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I mean, I just remember we talked about it before the Seattle game, and I don't want to quite say I was ready to give up on Marcus Wheaton's NFL career, but I just wondered if we were ever going to see kind of anything more than 4 catches for 38 yards, kind of what he'd been putting up, you know, on the good weeks. And boy, you can just see the confidence level that he has now, that Ben has in going to him. We can talk about 1 and 1A as we often do with AB and Martavis Bryant, but I'll tell you, Marcus Wheaton is certainly 1B right now. He has become a serious threat. And let's not forget Darius Heyward-Bey on a nice stop and go, basically got Aqib Talib on a 3rd and 20, and that's a really not very smart play by Talib to bite on that and get caught on the hook and go, and 23-yard penalty later, first down for the Steelers.
And to Talib's credit, that's all he could do, right?
He was toast.
I mean, that's a touchdown if he doesn't grab Heyward-Bey as he goes by. And that was a good route by Heyward-Bey there to get him to bite on that as well too.
And then, you know, by the way, the Steelers did, you know, settle for a field goal there. So.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So, I mean, you're talking about a 4-point play there, a 4-point swing, so to speak. So now let's get to the man that we run out of adjectives to describe.
AB or Ben, I mean, because, you know, we've run out of adjectives on both of them, but, I mean, AB is uncoverable. It's just crazy.
It really is. You're talking about a player that went up against probably one of the top, I don't know, where would you rank Chris Harris Jr.? Top five?
Yeah, for sure, top five. I mean, you know, you probably might put Talib in there too. So, I mean, it's just, you know, look, Chris Harris didn't play a terrible game. I mean, you got that ball where he and AB go up for it together, and AB catches it. You know, the one that's batted in the air. A couple of the other plays, you know, Harris is kind of looking at different things, and he's right there on the coverage. The pass interference call, that was probably the right call down the right sideline, but he was in great position. He really didn't probably play that right. But, you know, it's not like – I mean, Chris Harris was not bad in this game. It's just Antonio Brown is so good. Ben's delivering the ball on target, on time.
And I apologize for Toby getting excited about that as well, too. But and the touchdown, the bang eight, if you go back and look at the overhead shot of that, I think you had Martavis Bryant running a post on that as well, too. And the safety kind of cheated to cheated to Martavis Bryant's side and really looked kind of frozen there. And go back and look at that route that AB runs, too, with the lean to the outside while Harris is outside of him, had a little a subtle kind of arm out to gain some separation and you know, bang. I mean, you give him, you know, that's college wide open for Ben Roethlisberger right there.
We have seen that against the Steelers so many times this year. You go back to that Seattle game on the 3rd and 15 to Doug Baldwin. You know, it's a perfect setup. You run the two verticals. And that safety's playing a single high against man coverage. And he as you said, Dave, he's got to make a decision. And the reality is it's almost impossible for a safety to make that, you know, make the right decision there if the quarterback gives him any kind of look away. And it was a perfectly thrown ball. And I don't know which touchdown I liked better that Antonio Brown caught, because that one in the back of the end zone was another perfectly thrown ball.
And that was a dime for sure. And it makes you kind of wonder, you know, T.J. Ward missed this game with an injury. Omar Bolden missed the game. So, you know, I can't remember who was back there. I may have been Bruton, may have been the safety back there on that second touchdown. And remember, Bruton was the one that Cody Wallace, I think.
Oh, my goodness, I mean, boy, you want to talk about dirty late hits. He's going to be wearing a big fine on that one.
Yeah, he'll get a visit from the FedEx man this week for sure. But just, you know, those little subtleties of the game of players missing, you know, your starters missing and having reserves fill in back there really, really may have been noticeable on that one touchdown alone. And you know, Ben really, really had a great game up until, you know, the final, that final interception. You know, which I don't know what in the heck he was thinking or he saw on that play. You know, you're better off just falling down, really, instead of, you know, if you fall down, at least, you know, the clock's going to run, what, to the two-minute warning at that point? Or do they use a timeout on that side of –
They used it at 2:08. Maybe I'm getting my halves confused. I'm trying to remember. I think they used it before the two-minute warning.
I'm trying to scroll through here myself to get a just on that. Let's see, Roethlisberger threw the interception with 2:08.
Right, so, and then they got to play at 2:01, right?
Right, right. So what I'm saying is, if Ben just falls down and just takes the sack there, then you know the clock runs down to the 2 minute warning, right?
Yes.
So, I don't know, 6-1, half of at the very least, he should have just threw that ball about eight rows up into Heinz Field there, in my opinion. I know they can never make it easy sometimes at the end of these things, it seems like. But, I mean, that outside of that, pretty flawless game. And, you know, the offensive line, boy, that Denver front is as advertised, right?
Really good, really good group. And Malik Jackson was the guy that we talked a lot about on Friday, as really disruptive, that, you know, maybe people knew less of, because the other two guys, particularly Von Miller, gets most of the attention, and the guys in the secondary getting a lot of attention. But he was great, pretty much had his way with the guys on the left side of the Steelers line, more or less. Three sacks for the Broncos. The Steelers came right back after two of those sacks to make big plays, to get first down. So that was key stuff. And, you know, a couple of holding calls, a couple that didn't get called. You know, Cody Wallace is, you know, kicking and scratching and clawing to try and do the job back there. And, you know, when your quarterback drops back 55 times or 58 times or 60 times, whatever actually the total dropbacks was, you know, they certainly get a passable grade.
Yeah, passable considering the circumstances and the personnel they were going up against. And I think I predicted correctly. I got one right. I said the Broncos would have three sacks in that game and the Steelers would have two.
You did.
And blind squirrel found the nut on that one. But as you pointed out, the sacks weren't killers. You know, obviously, at least they didn't turn the football over in on any of those, and you know, you live to fight another day. And did they convert after all three of those sacks? Do you remember?
I'd have to go through, but I think they did. I think they converted. Well, I can't remember when.
Not the first one. Yeah, well, there was a holding that was declined.
Right.
On Cody. So that one they didn't convert.
Yeah, that was a three and out drive. They went three and out.
They converted after the second one. It looks like when was that?
That was the end of the half.
End of the half. They converted that one. There was another sack in the third quarter. Villanueva was called for holding, and they
declined.
They declined that, and they converted after that on third down.
Yeah.
So two of the three.
Yeah, pretty good stuff. And look, you know, the Steelers didn't run the ball well in this game. They, you know, when you look up and the stat is, you know, you've run 35 plays and you've thrown 30 passes, that is not ideal. If you look back into Ben Roethlisberger's history and passing games where he's had more than 40 attempts, the record is not pretty. But certainly got it done in this one. Yeah, there is a little bit of a blemish with the interception at the end, and it just seems really uncharacteristic of what we've seen Ben do over the last couple of years in terms of his development as a quarterback. You know, it just was a bad throw. It was a bad decision and a bad throw, and we haven't seen much of that. We haven't seen many bad decisions. We haven't seen many bad throws, but obviously he throws it behind Williams, and, you know, the choice there was sketchy to begin with. Dave, were you level of surprise or shock that after that, on their next possession, that they go to AB on that quick out to basically end the game, put the ball back up in the air?
No, not really, to be quite honest with you. How many times have we seen it, Mike, you know, late in games like that?
Third and five, a minute 30 left, and at your own 46.
Just going for the juggler.
Yeah,
you know?
end the game. And look, I think we're both fans of that, and the way Antonio Brown's playing, you know, that should be pitch and catch. That's the ball that Mike Vick tried to throw on the other side, going, you know, across his body to end the game against the Ravens, to convert a third or fourth down against that Ravens game that they end up not winning. But yeah, it should be relatively easy. They made it look easy, and then, you know, that's all she wrote.
Yeah, and confidence in your quarterback to do it, you know, and your players on the field there. So Shazier, first career interception. It was good to see, you know, as much many struggles as he's had so far this season. It was good to see him get that. Boy, how many other interceptions were dropped? Robert Golden dropped a gift. Will Allen dropped a gift.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. You know, Will Allen's, that would have been huge. Yeah, Golden's was the one on the sideline that he kind of juggled a little bit.
Yeah, that might have been a pick six. And did Shazier miss another one in that game?
I don't remember that, but how about that? Is that three straight weeks where we saw Jarvis Jones with the pick against the Colts, his first career interception. We saw Stephon Tuitt last week against the Bengals, his first career interception. We get Ryan Shazier this week.
So, absolutely.
So
I could live with that.
What's that make the Steelers on the season? That's 15 interceptions. That's the most since 2010 when they had 21. I think that's 15 on the year. So, you know, we talked about this. The Steelers defense winning football games is based on them getting turnovers because they're going to give up the yards. They got two. They didn't lose the turnover battle. And, you know, they set up points, as you pointed out, they set up points with those things. Now, the end of the first half, four straight drives, four straight touchdowns on an offense that had gone 24 straight possessions without a score, without a TD. I mean, it was rough. But I have to tell you, Dave, in the second half, I didn't feel like the Broncos were going to score. And I don't know what the difference was because Manny Sanders, obviously, in the first half of that game, just had a field day with, I think, you know, 140 of his 189 yards. But obviously they did a much better job in the second half.
Yeah, the blown coverage. If you notice on the sideline after that happened, Will Gay and Shazier and Keith Butler all over there talking, and looked like Shazier was trying to make his defense there. So one would think, and we'll see what the All-22 says. One would think that with Blake coming off the corner there, that Shazier has to somehow get in and, you know, drop into coverage on Manny Sanders, which probably still isn't an ideal matchup, but it's better than nobody, obviously. The first touchdown.
He goes into the he leaves him. He leaves him again, right? He passes him along and goes into the flat. Nobody picks
him
up.
Yeah, that looked like that. Yeah, but that looked like that might have been half coverage, and that's another one I can't wait to look at on the All 22. That looked like it might have been half coverage on that side. And more than anything, I might want to put that on Cockrell because if it's a thirds coverage over there, somebody's got to get that seam, and it's either got to be either Will Allen or Cockrell. Well, you'll see Cockrell.
Cockrell had a guy outside of him, didn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, when you talk about, you know,
yeah,
thirds,
got to get over and help.
You know, thirds. I mean, that's why that seems so hard to defend, and that's why teams like the Raiders and the Seahawks and, good Lord, go through the games. You know, that's how you beat the Steelers, is throw in that middle third or in that third of the field there. And like I said, when we get the All 22, we'll get a better look at that. But I think Shazier was doing his job to drop out into the flat there. So that touchdown is probably going to be on either Will Allen or Ross Cockrell on that side.
So you're the Denver Broncos, and you started 7-0, and you're 3-4 in your last seven. You've lost two in a row. You got the Bengals home Monday night. I mean, these are serious times right now for Denver. I mean, they lose this game on Monday night, and their division, they lose their division to the Chiefs, assuming the Chiefs run the table here the last two after winning whatever it is, eight in a row, like we predicted 8 weeks ago. And you know, could be Steelers-Denver in that first-round matchup, but it certainly could be a lot of different things in that first-round matchup.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to play Denver again, but you're right. And the only thing going for Denver right now, I think, is the fact that they're going to play a Bengals team without Andy Dalton, and that's going to be a tough chore for AJ McCarron.
For sure, it'll be a tough chore. But you know, we'll see if Osweiler's, you know, not 100%. It'd be interesting to see what decision they make at the quarterback position, because obviously Peyton practiced a little bit this week. I'm sure he'll practice more, but it is desperate times now for the Broncos, and that is three straight second halves where they haven't scored a point. That's pretty shocking.
Yeah, and especially when you can't do it against the Steelers defense, right?
Yeah. You got to put point. I mean, because if you're Steelers or if you're a Bronco fan and you're watching this game and it's 27-13 at the half, you're like, okay, we put up 10 points. We're in pretty good shape here. This is goose egg.
You know, one thing that and I talk about this, I think, with you on Friday, is my fear was that they're going to drop eight in coverage, right? And they did in that first half, and I sure wish they'd stop that, because they could drop 11 in coverage, and I don't think it's going to be enough if you give a quarterback enough time. And in that first half, they definitely did it, what, four or five times maybe? We'll see what the charting says on that. But this wasn't Matt Hasselbeck you were playing here. Osweiler, while he not overly great with a deep ball, he sure can throw the intermediate ball. And it really, that might have been one of the biggest changes in the second half, because I don't think I remember many, if any, times that they dropped eight in coverage and only rushed three. They're not built. They don't have the personnel to just get by with rushing three and play zone in the back end, in my opinion.
Yeah, and his confidence had to go up. That opening drive after they fumble, they get the ball back. They go 12 plays, 85 yards, and he was pushing it down the field. And then he gets the freebie to Manny Sanders. So, you know, then he has the rushing touchdown on, what, third and eight. That was a nice decision by him. Good coverage by the Steelers. Osweiler showed a little bit more mobility than I think most of us thought he probably had. Nothing was going the Steelers' way in that first half.
So where do we stand now with this defense? You feel any better after that second half?
No, I feel exactly the same. It's exactly what we think it is. It's a, you know, bend but don't break, but really it's bend like crazy and hope the other team commits some penalties, turnovers, you get some turnovers, and a couple stops in the red zone. But no, I don't, you know, it's the same. Now, it'll be interesting to see. And I'll just go back to the fact that the Steelers defense in the second half, you go back to the last three games they've played. I don't know if the Colts scored in the second half of that game. They scored on those opening drive. They got two drives. They got a field goal off the two turnovers. And then I think they scored in the first half. I'm not sure they scored in the second half. I'm not, you can see what I'm doing here. I'm going to correlate Steelers points given up to Brandon Boykin being on the field. And again, Brandon Boykin's not going to the Pro Bowl, but the Steelers look like a much better defense with him out there.
Yeah, I mean, look, we can complain about it till the cows come home, David, but I can guarantee when they line up against Baltimore next week what the rotation's going to be. It's Blake's going to be out there starting, going to play two or three series, and then in comes Boykin for the most part of the middle game. And then depending on how close it is and whether or not they suffer injuries will determine, you know, how much playing time Blake gets in the second half. And like I said, at the start of the show, four or five snaps for Blake in the second half against the Broncos, and you know, luckily one of those plays that he was in for didn't result in an explosive play. And Boykin, to his credit, played good. You know, both tackling. You know, Mike Tomlin would kind of have you believe that Boykin's not a great tackler, but so far, really, you know, he had a missed tackle, what, in that game against the Colts across the middle there. But for the most part, I'd like what I've seen from Boykin up around the line and run support and all like that. Now, obviously, they're going to try to keep him off the field, it looks like, as much as possible on obvious run downs. It's hard not to notice that the defense doesn't seem to be giving up as many explosive plays in the air when Boykin's on the field.
Yeah, for sure. let's talk about some of the backers. And I don't know who made an impression on you in this game. Obviously, what the Steelers did in the second half was more important. There was a big play, which was not a linebacker initially. It was Steve McClendon. When the Broncos got third and goal, they ended up scoring the touchdown anyway with Osweiler's scramble. Steve McClendon burst through, and James Harrison helped him out, and Golden got credit for the tackle on the sideline on that 6 or 7 yard loss. But which of the linebackers was impactful in your assessment post game now?
Oh wow, outside or inside?
Take your pick. To me, I saw Shazier a lot. Not all of it good, but in there a lot. But you know, I didn't see as much. You know, Bud Dupree again. I'm not seeing Bud Dupree be impactful. The other guys, a little bit, I would say. I thought Timmons was okay. I thought the two guys on the right side were okay. Just not seeing a lot of Timmons. You know, we saw a little bit of Moats, but, you know, one holding call for him and one hands to the face against him.
Well, for starters, and we've seen this now, and I think even you asked Tomlin about this, about the dime personnel. We're seeing Timmons come off the field a little bit more. The Steelers had Robert Golden out there as a third safety in the box quite a bit in that game against the Broncos. Now, some will call it dime, some will call it big nickel. I really prefer to kind of call that a big nickel, to be honest with you, David, because you got six defensive backs, three of those are safeties, and one of them's in the box. So, call it what you want, dime personnel, big nickel. But we are seeing that right now, and I think Golden really, I think Golden plays good in the box,
I think
to be quite honest.
I think Golden, look. Keep saying it. I thought Will Allen was better in this game, so I'll give him some credit because I've been a bit hard on him. But I think Golden has been very good this year. I think he's been a really solid player, and I would have loved to see him come up with another pick if he could have held on to that one. But, you know, he's done his job.
Where I worry about him the most is short areas in the red zone with Golden. Doesn't have a great track record there. As far as the linebackers go, I think Shazier was probably the most visible in this game, for both good and bad. Did James Harrison even register a stat in this game? I'm going to look right now. I don't remember seeing him on the stat sheet. No, it doesn't look like Harrison recorded any stats in this game. Shazier and Timmons both had six total tackles a piece in this game. I'm trying to see. Jarvis Jones had two total tackles. I think we saw Jarvis had almost get in on a sack and have a pressure off the edge during that game. Moats only had one total tackle in the game. Didn't he have a pass defense, a pass bat down in the game? And Bud Dupree, really not a great game for him either. One combined tackle. So yeah, you would like to start. I mean, what did we say before the game? It just seems like every time this Steelers defense goes up against a offensive line that we think, okay, this will be the game that they should dominate, or at least you know, make an impact on, they don't. And I think you really have to go back to the game against the Chargers was really the last time that we've really seen them do that. So they've got to find a way to get better pressure on opposing quarterbacks and outside of times when they're only rushing three. I thought they did a little better job in the second half, though, getting pressure. But you got to keep in mind, though, the Broncos faced a lot of second and third and longs, right, in that second half?
They did.
So, you know, I think when you get predictable situations there, that lends itself to the quarterback having to hold on to the football longer and your guys being able to get up the field a little bit more. So, I mean, yeah, look, the whole defensive unit's still a concern to me. I mean, I don't feel any better just because of what happened in the second half of that ball game, and I think you would agree.
Yeah, I would largely agree, and it'll be interesting to see here the last two games kind of, again, what Mike does with his mixing and matching, because look, I mean, you got these guys coming in, you got the situation where it's obvious that Blake, you know, again, it was the touchdown pass. Nobody's putting it on Blake necessarily, putting the Manny Sanders 61-yard touchdown on Blake, but he comes off the edge and then they make the change and it just seems like things got a little bit better from there. So I don't really get why it is what it is, why the rotation's what it is. Again, I'm not putting Brandon Boykin in the Pro Bowl, but I think he does some good things out of the slot, and I, you know, seems to me like that's a better mix of the Steelers personnel. Now, if you want to split the time between Cockrell and Blake, I probably wouldn't throw my arms up about that, but I'd probably take Cockrell over Blake, and then I like how they've been mixing Golden in. So maybe they learned something in that second half from their own schematics and their own personnel. And look, they're not going to play another, you know, look, they'll get challenged by Johnny Manziel in the Cleveland game, but they don't have great receivers. I don't know, who knows who's going to play quarterback for Baltimore in this game coming up. But the next time is going to be in the playoffs, and, you know, the margin for error in the playoffs is about zero.
You know what, Tomlin talks about Blake and why his decreased playing time is an effort to keep him fresh because
he
plays
special teams.
For special teams. Brandon Boykin played 50 defensive snaps against the Broncos and 11 special team snaps. 61 snaps. Does he not deserve to be kept fresh?
Tell me again, Boykin?
Boykin,
61 snaps.
50 defensive snaps, 11 special team snaps.
Yeah.
61 total snaps.
Yeah.
he don't deserve to be fresh? kind of... You know, smelling a little bit of a rat there. Look, you got to take it off. Here's the good news. Here's the good news. You play a very, very, very beat up Ravens team, and who knows who's going to be at quarterback? Is it going to be Jimmy Clausen or Matt Schaub? It might not really even matter, or it shouldn't. One wouldn't think when you look at this thing on paper. And then after that, you're going to play a Browns team. You know, ready to hit the golf course, you know. And I know you're a little bit worried about Johnny Manziel. But, I mean, these are two games that, regardless of who's out there on the field for the Steelers defense, these are games that the Steelers should win. And it'll be very disappointing if they don't. They control their own destiny, or, they, you know, they have all along here going into this game this past weekend.
So let me ask you, if the Jets lose to the Pats and the Steelers win, are they in?
Steelers secure a playoff spot if that happens.
Yeah. Is that a Saturday night game?
For the Jets?
Yeah, they play Saturday again?
No. The Jets play the Patriots on Sunday in New York at 1 o'clock.
Okay, so we'll have...
Same time the Steelers play the Ravens on the road in Baltimore. In Kansas City plays Cleveland, so one would think that's a W for Kansas City.
What's your takeaway from the weekend's games? First of all, did you get to see the Odell Beckham, Josh Norman stuff?
Absolutely, I did. And, you know, I talked halfway through it, talking about, boy, it sure looked like Norman was getting underneath Odell Beckham's skin. And that one helmet-to-helmet, That Odell had on look, Norman wasn't a saint in this game either, but I would not be surprised if Odell gets a game off.
Yeah, he deserves a game off, and I can't believe he didn't get tossed in the game. I mean, look, I thought Cody Wallace's hit was borderline, you know, throw him out of the game type of stuff. I mean, you know, helmet to helmet, cleaned the guy out off the pile after a hit that was, you know, somewhat questionable on Antonio Brown making the tackle. But, you know, those are the types of things that you don't want in the game. And he's, yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know if he's a first time offender or how the fine will work out in terms of the dollars, but that was pretty bad stuff. But what Norman and Beckham were doing, and put most of it, 90% of it on Beckham, was outrageous.
It sure was. Slapping each other in the head. And that's
coming in with a knee to the head on that one play when he's down on the ground, kneeing him right in the head. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah. You can't have that, and it's going to end up costing Tom Coughlin his job.
Well, that's interesting. That'd be an interesting topic for Wednesday. Who's getting fired? A lot, you know, heck of a comeback by the Giants in that one, but obviously short again, and that's, you know, how many games have they lost in the last minute? About six of them. But, you know, I don't know that it guarantees to knock them out of the playoff berth, but obviously that didn't help any.
Well, I mean, the Giants have to make the playoffs, right? If they don't, he's gone, I would think. Coughlin.
I don't know that he's a guy that the Mara's ever going to fire. I mean, you know, maybe he resigns, but I don't think he's gone, to be honest.
I do, and it'll be interesting to see. What about your buddy Chip?
He's not going anywhere. And they turn things around, but he's not going to get fired, and he's not leaving. So, you know, they need to do a better job. But they had a tough draw last night, and, you know, they're not out of it. That's the other thing.
Can they win with Sam Bradford?
Look, I got to see part of last night's game. I saw him play the past couple weeks. I think he's been better, but I think you're still looking to upgrade.
Well, how long is that upgrade process? Can you expect a rookie to come in and win for you?
Nick Foles went 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions in one, so, you know, I guess you can.
Yeah, no, improbable. You gotta get the right guy for that system, I think. I still think Chip's gone. But, boy, what about Houston? What? I mean, Bill O'Brien, I don't know. I mean, is it just got the perfect storm schedule? Injuries happen along the way there?
Yes.
I think so, too. That's the team I'd most like the Steelers to play in the first round of playoffs, to be quite honest with you.
Okay, so since everybody knows the scenario, it's pretty straightforward stuff here for the Steelers. If they win two and Kansas City loses one, the Steelers can beat a 5 seed. What's the scenario for the Steelers finishing second? Dave, the Bengals have to lose their last two. Is it still in the cards for the Steelers?
Yes, the Bengals didn't. The Bengals, all they need to do is win or tie, right? And they get the division. So they have to lose two. The Steelers have to win out. And then I think it goes to strength of victory would be the tiebreakers right there. And right now the Steelers have that. So I think that's, of course, obviously subject to change in these final few weeks here, but if things go like we think they would go outside of that, they need Cincinnati to lose their final two. Now,
who are Steelers fans rooting for, Broncos or Bengals?
I think you obviously want to try to get the division still, if possible. So I think it would take a minor miracle in week, 17, the Bengals play the Ravens,
right? Yeah.
So, you know, stranger things have happened when you don't have your starting quarterback. I think you got to root for the Broncos in this one, to be quite honest with you.
And that means the Steelers very well. Does that mean, okay, so that'll give Denver a head-to-head tiebreaker over Cincinnati. So Steelers, it looks like right now the Steelers are going to play the Broncos and the Bengals in round one. Those are the likely scenarios.
Yes, because, I would agree with that. Because I don't think – I mean, Houston's not going to get the number 3, right?
Nope, no chance.
So
– They're locked in at 4, and if Kansas City wins out, they're 5. So we'll see what happens with Kansas City's last two games. We talked about their schedule. I think they got the Chargers, and maybe they have the Raiders, so maybe they can still lose a game. I don't have that right in front of me, but
Cincinnati would have the first round bye if they went out.
Yeah, because right? They would have beaten the Broncos, right.
So the Steelers would be looking at either Denver or Kansas City in the first round, more than likely.
Right, but it'll be Denver. If Denver beats Cincinnati, they win their last game, so I think it'll be them. I'm just saying that depending on who wins this game, Denver or Cincinnati, that could well, look, there's still three teams the Steelers could play, but I would still bet it's Denver or Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah.
But who do the Chiefs have the last 2 weeks?
Well, they got Cleveland this week. That should be an easy W for them, and they end the season. Who, the Raiders? Yeah, the Raiders.
Yeah, but that's not a guaranteed victory.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Okay, injury report. We didn't go over that. Generally, relatively healthy here down the stretch.
Yeah, and Mike Mitchell left that game briefly. I didn't think he was going to come back after leaving with that shoulder injury, but, I mean, he made it back on the field. And I don't think Mike Tomlin gave us an injury update post-game, but to my knowledge, I mean, I think everybody finished just fine. So I think they're in good shape going into week 16 here. Interesting question I think we've got from a couple of readers, from a couple of Twitter followers is, let's say the Jets lose to New England and the Steelers beat Baltimore and the Steelers lock up a playoff spot. Would they rest any of their starters in week 17? And I think the obvious answer to that is it depends on whether or not they can improve their seeding.
Right.
And one would think that they still, regardless of what happens with Kansas City, you would think that regardless of what happens this coming week, the Steelers would still have an outside shot to improve their seeding because Kansas City versus Oakland, right?
Yeah, no, I think you got to go in with the expectation. They won't have a scenario where it's a done deal because, and you know, this is going to be one of those things where I don't need to look at the schedule. I'm betting that Kansas City Oakland's not a 1 o'clock kickoff, is it? Is the game in Kansas City?
It is in Kansas City. Both their final two games are in Kansas City against Cleveland and Oakland, and both of them are 1 o'clock kickoffs.
Okay, so the Steelers won't know the answer to that. So the answer is no. You're not going to rest guys.
No, nope, you're right. So if you were hoping for that to happen, not going to. So you go ahead and count on playing full games against both the Ravens and the Browns.
So Antonio Brown in single season records. What are we going to look at? He's going to be just short of the single season record. He's going to break his own record from last year.
Boy, 116 catches so far. You would have to think he has a shot at his last year record, right?
What did he finish with last year? 133?
129. So he needs 14 catches in the final two games. Hard seeing him not get that.
Yeah, and then he it's 143 is Marvin Harrison's record. Is that right?
I'm trying to remember. 144? Is that right?
Right around there. So that's probably out of reach.
Yeah, it would take, I don't know, you're talking about Antonio Brown here. It would take a monumental. I mean, he's at 116 now. I mean, you're talking, geez, I mean, 30, he would need 15. Yeah, it's out of reach. But, I mean, he could still hit 2,000. I mean, let's see. He's got 1,586 yards.
So he needs 414, so you got to average 207. That's pretty tough.
Yeah, that's pretty tough to do there, too.
Has anybody done that? I mean, I remember, that hasn't been done, has it?
I'll have to keep talking.
Calvin Johnson did 1967. That kind of sticks in my head. And I was thinking that nobody'd done 2,000, but again, you know, it's a little bit different than baseball. Our NFL records, you know, at the end of the season, we talk about them and pay attention to them, but they're not locked in people's heads like 714, 755. I don't know that anybody.
Calvin Johnson, 1,964 yards in 2012.
Okay.
So how many is eight? Oh, math. It's math time.
So it's
178.
378.
Oh, excuse me, 378. Okay. That's going to be tough to do, too.
Yeah, he's going to have a couple more games like that this week. So let's drop 180. I don't even know what he finished with.
Last year?
No, with the game yesterday against Denver. He finished with how many yards?
What was it? 189.
Yeah, so he and Manny putting up, video game numbers.
Absolutely, and you got to remember, Manny didn't have what, about 40 something in the second half or something like that.
And he had a 24-yard. Yeah, he had 181 with a 24-yard rush, so he had 205 total yards. So big day for him. Good for him. He's a stud. And the Steelers really, they couldn't cover him. And I would be curious as to why he didn't get more targets and more opportunities in the second half. But kudos to the Steelers defense for tightening up and making this one, making a game of it in the second half. I mean, you're down 17 points. You don't know that it's going to be a game. But come back and got the win. And with that offense, that's really all they have to do is they just keep them in the game. And again, turnovers are going to be key going through the playoffs. How the Steelers perform in the red zone, both offensively and defensively. It's straight stuff. It's not anything new that we're telling you in week 15 for the first time. This is kind of how the game goes when your good teams are playing good teams.
Absolutely. And you have to, we'll watch the injury report this next week on the other side of the football. Jimmy Smith left that game for the Ravens with a thigh injury. This is the time of year where you throw those guys on the IR that final week, right? So if he's not able to practice early on the week, you could see them make a roster move, put Jimmy Smith on IR. If Jimmy Smith doesn't play, I don't know. I mean, maybe Antonio Brown can catch 20 balls against the Ravens, right? I mean, that they are banged up. You want to talk about a team snake bitten by injury this year? It certainly was the Ravens. And of course, again, in the final game against Cleveland, Joe Hayden's already on IR. It's not like he had much success against Antonio Brown so far during his career. I don't know. That guy continues to amaze me. And let me tell you, if you're going to see some instances in these last two ball games, especially if they're ahead, they're going to, the old Hines Ward effect. Feed him the ball and some cheap little forward shovel passes or whatnot to try to get him some stats there. Interesting. People are going to get mad at me for talking about this, but interesting offseason coming up for Antonio Brown, right?
I think you're going to do more of the same. You're going to play that shell game again this offseason because I just don't think they're going to set a precedent with 2 years left on his contract to renegotiate. So you're going to move some money forward again.
Yeah, and even then, though, is it going to be enough? There's only so much that you can move, and the cap hit moves so much, without adding new money to the contract. I outlined that in a post a couple of weeks ago. I'm with you. I don't think they give him a contract extension. I think they rob Peter to pay Paul. Rob his 2017 money and try to get him up around 11 or 12 million, maybe. He's still severely underpaid. But I won't hate him if he misses the OTA programs, I'll tell you that, because the guy's just been unconscious for the last three seasons for the most part here. David, we had quite the feedback on this from the show the other day. What are you gonna do with Mike Tomlin on Tuesday?
Don't hold your breath. How's that?
Don't hold our breath.
Yeah.
All right, you got to get creative for us. A lot of listeners are counting on you. Pledge your money, and several have done.
Yeah, it might be an off-season question. We'll see where we go.
All right, let's give some people some shout-outs here, David, to close this thing down. Pierre Miller, thank you for the donation. Carl McAllister, thank you for the donation. Frederick Powell. P-A-L-L-E, thank you. It looks like his last name, Peterson there. Joel Dellinger, Dwayne Ferguson, Raymond T. Evanhoff, Jaron Sperry, Brian Hollerud, Ahmed Al-Thani, John McAnally. See, all these people, Dave, they love you. Steve Johnston, Ben Hallam, Garrett Young, Taylor Carpenter, Andrew Welty, Jacob Madrid, Ben Kartzman, Francisco Nera, and I think we already hollered out to Victor Perry on the last show there as well too. Folks, thanks for the donations. We'll see what we can get David to do on Tuesday here with Tom and asking, what exactly do you do during the game? We had fun with that on Twitter for sure. We'll try to get our buddy John, right?
Yep.
Who covers the Ravens?
John Eisenberg on Wednesday.
on Wednesday there to see if we can get him back in here as well too. And of course, we'll go over everything that Mike Tomlin says during the Tuesday press conference. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you do want to still donate because you just love the show and the work that we do for you three times a week, go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll see the donate button in the navigation bar up top to the right. David, thanks for playing Hurt today.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.